Hey folks, welcome to this week's edition of Legal Beagle. We are joined by the lead litigation attorney for Negrete & Associates, Dylan McGurk, because we have gotten asked by a few different clients to explain what discovery is and how it works in the course of litigation. Welcome, Dylan.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. So let me just jump right in with that question. In a nutshell, how would you describe discovery and what that means to someone's case?
Sure. So as a case gets filed and you proceed through litigation, each party is entitled to engage in discovery. Discovery, in its most simple form, is a fact-finding process. What each party knows about the case, certain facts, and the circumstances surrounding the case.
So I've had clients ask me before, and I'm sure you've had clients ask you this, why they have to give past medical records. So let's say an accident happens on a certain date and a lawsuit is filed, and then the defense is requesting prior medical records. Why does that become relevant in the case for, you know, personal injury?
So that particular discovery device would fall under what's called a request for production. And the other side is saying, we're asking you to produce these prior medical records because what we think may be going on is that your client, the plaintiff, is complaining of injuries that may have pre-existed the crash. So in other words, if you have certain issues with your neck or back that pre-existed the collision and are subsequently claiming those same injuries, then the defense wants to know about it, and they want to try and say that they're not going to give you compensation or consideration for those injuries because they pre-existed the crash.
If I had a prior neck injury and then I get into an accident and my neck is worsened by that accident, does it mean I wouldn't get compensation because I had a prior neck injury?
That's a great question. And so the law protects individuals in that situation, and you are entitled to what's called an aggravation or exacerbation of those injuries. What can prove difficult is to what extent it has been aggravated or exacerbated, but the short answer to that question is yes, you are entitled to compensation and consideration for the aggravation.
What happens when a client says, I'm not going to give you my prior medical records, I won't sign an authorization to get those records, what on your side of the table as a plaintiff's attorney, what kind of conversation do you have with your client?
A lot of times, you know, they are entitled, they being the defense, is entitled to these records. And so we can try and limit the scope of what they are trying to obtain in terms of what's relevant. But ultimately, the court is usually going to allow the records to come forward. So I encourage the clients to sign the authorization, assuming it's been limited in scope. Otherwise, the defense does have other discovery tools, including subpoenas, that they could obtain the medical records anyways.
What other things have you experienced in your career that the opposing party has asked for, or maybe that you've asked for, that you think are a little unusual, that a layperson wouldn't think could be exchanged in the discovery process?
Oh, I'm trying to think of specific examples.
What about wedding photos?
Oh, that's a great question. So a lot of times there can be requests where we think that the defense is kind of going on a fishing expedition, if you will, trying to trace down a rabbit hole and see if something exists. One of the stranger ones may be wedding photos to say, hey, the plaintiff is claiming a shoulder injury and we want to see if she's dancing and throwing the bouquet around and things like that, just in an effort to try and discredit the plaintiff and find a way to prove that these injuries may not be as severe as the plaintiff is alleging.
So if you were to disagree, or maybe your client were to disagree with the request that's being made in discovery, what would be the way to resolve that dispute?
Usually starts with obviously a conversation with the other attorney, and hopefully you're able to come to some agreement. That's quite rare, actually, but when it doesn't work out between the attorneys, you can file certain things with the court, protective orders, certain things to attempt to limit the discovery request. But ultimately, discovery is a very open and wide net tool that the court will generally be rather generous, if you will, in terms of what they're going to allow the other side to explore.
So does a deposition fall under the scope of discovery?
Yes, it does. And so a deposition is, again, another fact-finding process in which the plaintiff is required to answer questions under oath in a generally an informal setting, but with a court reporter there and under the same sworn testimony that they would be under in a jury trial. In which the defense attorney gets to ask specific questions about background, medical conditions, and certainly the facts surrounding the crash and the injuries resulting from the crash.
I've defended depositions before, and I've had the defense attorney asking questions about where my client went to high school, and my client may be well into their 40s or 50s. And the client's looking at me with their hands up, kind of like, do I really have to answer these questions? And I know you kind of just said, yes. How is that? How does something that happened in high school relate to a claim being made 20 or 30 years later?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. Honestly, I ask myself that a lot too. And I think generally speaking, it's just a background information for one, the defense attorney to kind of size up the plaintiff, see how they respond to these questions, see where they may have lived. And also, they may be looking for additional witnesses, who they lived with. Did your apartment have stairs and you're claiming knee injuries, and were you able to walk up and down the stairs? Those types of things. But generally, the background information, while the plaintiff may answer it, my position, unfortunately, is it's not always that relevant. But again, you know, they are required to answer those questions.
And not to pick on the defendants. I know that we do plaintiff's work at Negretti & Associates, but I've made my fair share of unusual requests on the opposing party. Have you ever done that, or have you ever made requests that might seem a little out of bounds?
Sure. And again, that you're right. It does cut both ways. And that's really kind of goes back to what the definition of discovery is. It's simply a fact-finding process to obtain as much information as you possibly can in an effort to efficiently and effectively represent your client to the best you can. And without knowing what exists, you're not fulfilling that obligation. And so sometimes it's better to try and obtain this information just in an effort to know what it is, and then ultimately decide if you need to use it.
Gotcha. And to clarify for our listeners, because I think this is maybe where some of the confusion lies, discovery and admissibility in trial are two different things, right?
Exactly. They are entirely two different things. And so as I mentioned, discovery is there's a very wide latitude there of what the court would allow as what would be discoverable, saying, hey, the other side is allowed to discover this information. They're able to seek it and they're able to look into it. But they will usually reserve the admissibility of that evidence later down the road in an effort to determine whether it meets certain evidentiary rules, requirements, which is a whole nother beast, a whole nother can of worms, but in order to determine whether we're going to say, you know what, you were able to discover this, but we're not going to let this into trial. We're not going to let it be admissible for whatever reasons, but generally because it's prejudicial or it's irrelevant.
I've heard two different schools of thought. One is, with discovery, we're not hiding anything, share it all, who cares, because it's not coming in based on what you just said about admissibility. The other is, fight tooth and nail against every request that's made in discovery, because you know, that's what you should do if you have an attorney. Where do you lie in, with those two different positions?
Sometimes depending on my mood that day. But in all seriousness, you have to kind of approach this from what you anticipate the court would do. And I think generally they're going to, again, allow for a lot of discovery, a wider latitude. But at the same time, you have an obligation to protect the client. And I think if I had to draw a line in the sand, I generally fall on the side of, let's just make sure we're all on the same page, and let's just not open the door to everything. I think we owe clients that obligation, and to really try and act as the gatekeeper to a lot of this information, and within reason then fight the fights that you think have some legitimacy to them.
Dylan McGurk, lead litigation attorney for Negrete & Associates, thank you so much for joining us on this week's podcast. I would love for you to do another podcast with us to talk more about some of the different things that arise in litigation, because I think that's an area where most people get confused. They can understand the pre-litigation side of things. You make a claim against the insurance company, you try to negotiate, maybe there's some bills that have to be paid. I think people get really, really uncomfortable with litigation. So I think the more that you can educate people on what to expect and some of the nuances of litigation, the better prepared they'll be to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it.
All right, man. Take care.
Thank you.